This is Scott from California. When I'm not hiking at national parks, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Live from the podcast that has no batteries required, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Duggan. This tag on this podcast has always bugged me. You think I can just tear it off? I know the tag says, do not remove under penalty of law, but does anyone really care? I'm going to give this a go. Oh, shit. Hey, I got to get out of here. But first, on today's podcast, we welcome the host of the new Work Your Wealth podcast, certified financial planner, Mary Beth Storjohan. Also, from Dallas, Texas-based YourRichestLife.com, certified financial planner Katie Brewer. And finally, because what show would be complete without her, from a closet in Las Vegas, Nevada, the host of the Afford Anything podcast, Paula Pant. Also, on our FreshBooks FinTech segment, we'll talk to the founder of hot new app, Penny. And here he is, the guy who'll take it from here while I run for cover, Joe Saul Sehaj.
What an awesome coincidence. Doug doesn't know the difference between an ambulance and a police siren. Hey, everybody, I'm Joe Salcy. Hi, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And as Doug dashes out of the room, we're getting ready to start. And this is not a coincidence. You found us. You found the Stacky Benjamin Show. And we're so happy that you're here with us because we've got a fantastic show today for you. But first, something that's amazingly fantastic is when you head to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money, because Magnify Money is the place where you go when you're looking for lower interest rates on your debt, or you're looking to redo that debt strategy, maybe get a new checking account, get a new savings account. Over 92% of the products that are available are found on Magnify Money. Their closest competitor has just over 60%. And that's why we like them. stackybenjamins.com/magnify money is the place where you go. And whether it's an auto loan, a personal loan, refinancing, student loans, looking at CD rates, checking and savings accounts, whatever it is, stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. And by the way, if we click on student loan refinance on Magnify Money, check this out. The number one place is called SoFi, and they're our other sponsor, StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. There, we just did the work for you. And when I look at Magnify Money, they give SoFi an A-plus grade for their fine print, meaning it's very transparent what you're getting yourself into. Maximum term is 20 years. Fixed rate APR, 3.38 to 6.74. And then depending on your credit, and then variable rates, 2.36 to 6.28. No max loan. They'll tell you how much that they can refinance those loans for. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Here's some more good news. SoFi will throw in $100 if you refinance your student loan or take out a personal loan using our link, StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. And you'll find that they have many options to serve you, like flexible loan terms, extremely competitive interest rates we just read, better yet, they work with members, not just customers. People who do business with SoFi find they're a different type of company. They'll help you find a new job. They'll invite you to networking events. They roll out a range of services you won't find at banks. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. Great show today. Phenomenal roundtable guests. So let's get this party started. All right, let's walk across the basement here, dust off my dad's shortwave, and get this thing cranked up, see if we can get some of the greatest minds in financial writing and a brand new podcaster on the line. Let's start in Dallas, Texas, because this is probably easier. Katie Brewer from Your Richest Life Planning is back.
Thank you. I like to be introduced as the easiest one.
I did not mean that. That was, can I start over? How about this? Certified financial planner Katie Brewer is the easiest one. Is that better?
Yeah.
Right. How are you? It's been what? A couple months since you've been on the show. That's a, yes. You must have been shaking.
I was having total withdrawals. I was like, would you just let me on, please? Come on. I'm a stand in line over here.
Well, apparently, Katie, you and I weren't invited to Girls Weekend.
Apparently not. What's up with that?
I don't know.
You at least get an excuse.
That's right. I think I have the wrong genitalia. But let's head out to the desert in Las Vegas, where Paula Pant has a special guest with her, I think.
I do. So I'm in the closet here in Las Vegas. And as you might be able to hear, I've got a friend with me.
In the closet.
In the closet.
Yes.
Hello. I'm Mary Beth Storjahan, and I am in the closet with Paula Pant.
Well, we didn't need you to introduce yourself, Mary Beth, but now that you did, you've got a new podcast, girlfriend.
I do. It just launched. Yeah, it's called Work Your Wealth. I'm super excited to be, now I'm CFP, podcaster, author. I like to do some things.
Right. You had 4 seconds of free time and you had to fill it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well,
so we're celebrating the launch of the new podcast with a weekend in Vegas.
Yes.
That's great. And Katie and I weren't invited. That's okay. No, that's okay.
Really.
It's fine. Whatever. We won't take it personally because we get to spend the next like 40 minutes with you. So Katie, do you have goosebumps?
I do. It's like I can experience Vegas through this interview.
I know. Everybody's wondering when we're going to get started. So why don't we get started right now? Our first piece that we're going to talk about today comes to us from a blog called The Retirement Manifesto. Fritz at The Retirement Manifesto has some interesting writing here. He talks about stealth wealth. And Paulo, I think we'll start with you. This guy, he lives in a cabin in the mountains, but because he has to work in a city, he lives in a high-class neighborhood, man.
Yeah. So basically, because he still has to work in a city, he has two jobs. He has two places to live. And so when he's not at his cabin in the mountains, when he's working, he's renting a small apartment and basically is just kind of written an article about how all of his neighbors are flashy, all flash, no cash.
Yeah, he shows this picture. There's 36 houses on this map. And the most expensive one's $4.9 million. There are 7 in the $3 million range, 16 in the $2 million range, 33 in the million range. And he lives in a little apartment, drives a 2010 Nissan. His wife drives a 2011 Honda. They save 25% of their pay. They quietly support their church. They're 401k millionaires. They wrote about that on J Money site, Budgets Are Sexy. They enjoy great vacations, but really, you would never know these people are millionaires. So Mary Beth, let's go to you. What do you think about this style of living?
I think it's a great style of living. I think the one thing that I pulled from his article also was he wasn't necessarily judging those who don't live this style. And I think it's also, for me, my big thing with clients and readers and everything, it's about balancing what makes you happy. So he's choosing to sacrifice in some areas, like driving the older car, so that he can do those great vacations because that's a priority to him. So he's sacrificing in areas that aren't as important to do those things that are important to him. And I think that's a great overall general message in terms of our finances across the board.
When you read his situation, would you be spending money the way that he spends money?
Would I be spending money? I do. I think I sacrifice personally. Our family, we sacrifice in certain areas. We choose not to get the flashy cars. We also quietly support causes that are important to us. Don't necessarily flash around those things. And travel is important to us. So we're not afraid to sacrifice in the areas, you know, like having a huge house for no reason that we don't want to pay the maintenance on to actually put our money where our heart is what I actually say. It's a little cheesy, but put your money where your heart is.
And I know, Katie, that Mary Beth said that she doesn't judge the way people spend their money and that different people spend money differently. But the thought I had the entire time I'm reading this article is, what do you have money for if you're not going to spend it?
So you're thinking like, you know, why hoard all of your money if you're not spending it?
Yeah, I just thought he seems very proud of being a millionaire, like a lot of people are. But then I thought, what are you accumulating wealth for if it's not for things?
Yeah, we had to make it all the way down to the very, very, very bottom of his post, Joe. But he does talk about how he feels like kind of living the lifestyle that he's living is making him be able to not feel like he's chained to his job, that he can kind of have his mountain cabin and still be able to go into the city to work. And like Mary Beth said, those are all things that are really important to him. Personally, I would hate to be away from my family for 4 days a week, even if it meant that I was living in a cheap $1,000 per month apartment. But that's different from somebody else who might say like, hey, I'm saving a lot of money this way, and this is what's important to me and my family.
Paula, do you see yourself in this same situation, a stealth wealth kind of person?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think just because you have money doesn't mean that you should spend it. Like, you make the most efficient use of money when you are exchanging it for something that reflects your values. And your ability to make that exchange is independent of the amount that comes in through your paycheck, which is basically just like a really long and convoluted way of saying like your expenses don't have to be a percentage of your income.
Right. Which is a powerful thought because most of the time people think I've got to save X percent. I have to spend X percent. And you're saying none of those rules really need to apply.
Yeah. Well, I do think there's a minimum threshold that a person should save. But beyond that, you know, you shouldn't make yourself spend 80% of your paycheck just because you feel like you should.
Just because you got it. I got to spend more money today, man.
I don't have many people that fit into that category, unfortunately.
Right. Well, let's get a little in the weeds because we do have two certified financial planners with us today, Paula.
You're the token non-CFP on this roundtable, Paula.
Oh, no. Yeah, gosh. Judgy McJetterson.
Oh, no.
And also, you podcast from a closet.
Beautiful, beautiful closet, I must say.
I said two of us are not. So you and I are going to back up and we're going to let the pros go, right, Paula?
Wait, Joe, I thought that you were, don't you have some fancy license or something?
I do not. No. Any licenses.
Didn't you used to?
Any licenses I had, though, when I quit being a financial advisor. I let all that stuff go. I thought I was going to be a school teacher. So yeah, no licenses for me, man. So we're going to let the pros go here. Let's get a little bit in the weeds because a lot of people listen to this podcast are what they call FIRE, right? Financial independence, retire early. Mary Beth, let's start with you. What are some things if somebody does want to set up their money kind of the way that this guy has and retire at what, 51 or 52, I think it said? What are some of the things you got to do differently than you would do as a traditional client who wants to retire in their 60s?
The biggest thing that I would say even that I pulled from this article that he did that a lot of people don't do is actually understand what your values are and have those clear-cut goals. So I think a lot of people generally throughout, like you said, the age of 60, 65, and it's kind of just like trekking away. But being clear and concise and having that I want to retire at 50 timeline, understanding what your cash flow is. So I think it's understanding and being really dedicated to that and putting that as a top priority. So whereas with a lot of my clients, some of the things that we'll do is we'll try to work towards 2 to 3 goals at once. One of the things that you have to do when you're FIRE is this is the goal and you have to be willing to sacrifice in those other areas to make this goal happen.
So once somebody has that timeline, Katie, what are some of the differences in the way that you set up the investments?
One of the big things to know is just that if you've got stuff in retirement accounts, kind of the traditional age that you can start taking out of them is 59 and a half. So if it is your goal to retire at 52, 53, 55, traditionally retire. So like you need to pull money from your investments. You've got to set something up outside of just those retirement accounts. Otherwise, you're going to be paying the IRS a hefty little 10% bonus to them.
Yeah. Anything to add, Mary Beth? I mean, it seems to me that the tax ramifications of retiring early and the, like Katie said, those loopholes are the biggest part, but anything else you can think of?
No, I think just understanding that if your goal is to retire early and you're trying to play catch up with that, that you're putting more risk on, you're likely taking on more risk to make that happen as well. So, you know, there's the chances of meeting it, but you have to have a stronger risk appetite when you are, you know, if you're 20 trying to retire at 50, that's different. If you're 40 trying to retire at 50, completely different story. So understanding what the risk is going to look like there is a big thing.
Does that mean you have to be more comfortable missing it then?
Missing the money or missing the retirement date?
No, number two, missing the retirement date, because it seems like if you take more risk, you've got to be more comfortable with, okay, I want to go at 52 like this guy, but hey, because I'm taking more risk, there's a chance it might not be till 54, 55.
You definitely have to be willing to adjust your expectations. One of my clients right now, I do have a one-off client who's older, who's trying to retire, and we're constantly evaluating every 6 months to see, okay, do we need to push that retirement back a little bit further? Do we need to push it back a little bit further? Because the closer you do get, no matter whether you're 50 or you are 60, the closer you get to that retirement date, the more you have to be willing to maybe adjust it 1 or 2 years, give or take, and really have your head in the game to make that happen. And also really understand what your cash flow is also, is what can you afford to take from your portfolio? What kind of income will that look like for you? And, you know, if you're willing to retire at 50, are you up for changing your lifestyle to make that happen? Or are you trying to maintain the lifestyle that you have now?
Let's talk about some of that cash flow stuff for just a second, Katie. What are some things you see people with these aggressive early retirement goals? What are some things they cut out that the average person doesn't?
The biggest one I see is like paying off a mortgage early. And it's one that people don't think about all that often, but I mean, that could be a huge chunk of change in your cash flow that you're kind of adding back in if you don't have a monthly payment. So same deal with other debts, paying off student debts, buying a car and actually driving it for like 7 or 8 years. Those are all things that, you know, if you think about it and you're living off of a lot of money, you might not think about those things as anything other than needed. But when you're looking at early retirement, you might be like, hey, let me like really put my nose to the grindstone, pay this stuff off, and then that will kind of free up my cash flow so I don't have to take as much money out of my portfolio.
Right.
I'd say another thing on the cash flow also is considering moving to a state with no tax. That's also something that's a big consideration. You know, going from California to Texas would look a lot different for your cash flow.
But is that
everybody Vegas. Come to Texas?
Come to Vegas and sit in the closet.
Yes, there's more room.
Yeah, hashtag dream.
Paula's running it out on Airbnb as we speak.
Well, you know, I think about that. Okay, you know, because you see these articles online all the time, right? That if you move to states with more favorable tax treatment, your money goes further. But if you love where you live, isn't that part of what you're saying earlier, Mary Beth, about, you know, start off with your goals?
Yeah, and that's priorities. But some people are willing, again, so what sacrifices are you willing to make right. that happen? So if you're trying to retire because you want to travel more, well, hey, how much are you going to be home anyways? But right. if you want to stay where you live, so then, yeah, what are you willing to give up to actually stay in the state? Will you reduce your travel? Will you drive your car into the ground? Will you reduce dining out? What are those areas that you are willing to sacrifice in? And it's mostly those typical discretionary things where people will give up in order to stash away more for the retirement.
Paula, you are one of these people that lives a very non-traditional lifestyle. And do you often see people with this more visible wealth, as this guy says in his piece? Do you ever get jealous of those people going, you know, maybe I could spend a little more money than I do on this thing over here?
No, to be honest, I mean, when I was in high school and I didn't know any better, I did, because as a high school student, I would look at the fact that people were wearing Abercrombie and eating at Panera, and I saw that as signs that they were wealthy. But now that I know better, you know, I know that the consumption that you display on the outside is not necessarily indicative of your net worth. And also, given that I'm not in high school and I'm an adult and I have much more flexibility and choice about who I hang out with, most of my friends are not conspicuous consumption people. Like, most of my friends are totally happy going camping, sleeping in a tent, just hanging out, being in the sun, getting dirty, having a good time. Like, those are the people I choose to spend my time with.
I love that Panera was the example there. Like, I didn't get Abercrombie, but like Panera?
Right. That's the big money.
That was a big, you know what? The first time I ate at a Panera, I was in my 20s. And I remember having this feeling like I've made it, you know, like that was just, it was one of those things in high school that I saw the rich kids doing that. I was like, one day, man, one day I'm going to be able to do that.
I liken that also to those things mm-hmm. that we see now, not to get a little off topic, but we see a lot of entrepreneurs and people flashing their six-figure things that they are doing. And I always say, when I see people talking about that online, we don't see what's going on behind the scenes. So we see, again, the flashiness, we see the cars, we see the nice houses, but you don't know what their mortgages look like. We don't know if they're above or underwater. And a lot of people, we know to look into that because we are, again, like the finance people, but the general public doesn't even actually stop to think. They get too busy caught up in that cycle of, you know, the fear of missing out cycle is what I call it. And they kind of work themselves up to feeling like they're not enough or not doing enough, or why can't they have those things too? And that's what leads to the consumption cycle.
I think that's a great place for us to leave it. By the way, great on Fritz for sharing this much. Wasn't that cool that Fritz here at the Retirement Manifesto was as open about this as he was? I thought this was a fantastic article. We'll link to it in the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. There's a lot in here. This is
fun.
Yeah, this is something I'd expect Paula at Afford Anything. It's like 9,000 words.
You're like, man. It just doesn't end.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, Paula. We need a 9,000 word post.
Let's move on. The next piece that we'll talk about is from Kiplinger. Retiring today is 10 times riskier than it was 10 years ago. And Katie, it's funny, when I read about this, is Mark Cortazzo, CFP, CIMA. He's talking about you need to add significantly more risk in your investment portfolio in order to pursue the same rates of return as 10 years ago, according to a report from Callan Associates, one of the largest pension consulting firms in the world. When you read this, number one, did you buy into this, that retiring today is 10 times riskier than it was 10 years ago?
I think what they're going off of, it seemed like a lot of it was based off of the fact that bonds used to be paying quite a bit more right. than they pay now. And, you know, we're kind of looking in the article at like pension funds and how they were distributed. They could have a lot more in bonds and still have a pretty decent return. Just interest rates are pretty low right now. So if you put a whole bunch in bonds, you're not going to get the same type of return that you got back that they're comparing to.
And I think about this, Paula, do you think it's fair to compare now with 10 years ago? It seems like that idea of, you know, there's a bungee jumper on the front page of this, on the top of this piece. And I think that whenever you decide to make that, I'm not going to work anymore, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I frankly think this is a clickbait article with, a weak central thesis. I just don't think there's much substance here. I mean, no, it is not fair to compare today to 10 years ago, partially because if we are looking at an entire retirement, that retirement's going to last for 40 years. So we're taking a very narrow sample size. 10 years is, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of the life of an investment portfolio, 10 years is not that long. And they're making some pretty outrageous claims about the expected rate of return that an investor would get. I just don't buy it. I mean, I could cherry pick dates and try to make outrageous claims based on said cherry picked dates. But when you zoom out and you look at the broader picture, you know, we have quite a bit of historic data that shows what the U.S. stock and bond market have done over the long run. And we've just got to remember that you don't go to an all-cash portfolio on the day that you turn 62 or 65.
Right, because you're going to need money when you're 85.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, so you're withdrawing a small percentage of your portfolio every year in retirement, and, you know, and the rest of it stays invested. And so the money that is in your portfolio remains invested throughout your retirement, and you adjust it every year, you know, like according to a strategy that you feel is right for you. And basically, I just think they're cherry picking dates and trying to come up with scare tactics so they can get more clicks on this article.
Well, okay, I do think there's
scare tactics is what popped up for me as well. As a, like putting my financial planner cap on, basically, I think this article is a case for why you work with a personal financial planner. Like, this is why you don't do it yourself. You know, if you're reading articles like this, then yes, a retiree is going, somebody reading this article is going to be a little bit more terrified now. And then they could be end up taking more risk based off of something like this. And that's why you don't just read articles like this and try to apply it to your situation. You also hopefully talk to a professional somewhere.
Yeah, but Mary Beth, when you look at bonds as an example right now versus, you know, 7-8 years ago, clearly you're making different decisions now than you were then, which says to me that, you know, this guy might be right, that it is riskier.
Yes, that is riskier. Where's my snap?
I mean, okay.
The closet's gone down.
Are you, I mean, my first question is, are you making different decisions about bonds now than you were 10 years ago? Like, if you've decided, let's say that you've decided that your ideal asset allocation is your age in bonds with the remainder in equities. Will that have changed between 10 years ago and today? I mean, sure, the returns that we've seen on bonds in the recent decade have not been what they historically were. But does that mean that your asset allocation has changed?
If I have an income strategy based on the income off bonds, it seems like it would have had to have changed.
I would think that your strategy would be, if you're already retired, a 4% withdrawal rate or a 3.5% withdrawal rate, or heck, get a small part-time consulting gig in which you make an extra $500 or $1,000 a month and boom, your problem is solved.
Did you just tell retirees to go back to work?
I'm just saying you have flexibility, and flexibility is the best security. So rather than like freaking out, Chicken Little, sky is falling, hiding in your gold bunker, why not just embrace the fact that you are a flexible human being who can either earn more, spend less, or, you know, adapt to changing circumstances?
Katie, have you found that you're making different portfolio decisions with clients now than you were 5-6 years ago?
I mean, a lot of it is just expectations. Part of the point of this article was like, you know, you used to be able to have a pension and know exactly what it was going to produce, have it be backed by the company. And then even if the company failed, it could possibly be backed by the Pension Guarantee Corporation Association, which one am I thinking of here? And that's just not the case anymore. So the planning might be different because, you know, people might not know, hey, I've got to accumulate enough money where I can take a 4% withdrawal rate. That seems to come to a shock to a lot of people that are younger that I talk to. And they're like, wow, that's a lot of money that I've got to have saved up. I'm like, well, you know, if you've got $1 million and you make $40,000, you know, that's perfect. But if not, we need to figure out either if the expenses are going down or if your savings is going up or if you're going to work part time or, you know, what you're going to do.
So you're saying our math may have been too aggressive back then. Not that there's anything wrong with the planning you're doing now. It's just maybe we were a little too aggressive then.
Well, essentially it took all of that math off of the individual. If they had a pension where right. There was an actuary for the pension that was doing all of the calculations about, you know, how much needs to be funded in order to produce how much out. Everyone's kind of, it's the Wild West now. We're all kind of on our own. So, you know, it's important to each person to actually know what they're getting into, being able to actually know what their real spending is, not just, oh, 75% of today's spending, you know their actual spending, know their actual target number for how much they need to have saved up and know like what their income is going to be coming in to be able to plan around that.
Which is, Paula, Katie's point, I think, is back to your point, which is you're doing the best planning when you realize that nothing is secure.
When you realize that being flexible is the best security.
And that's what we do. I mean, we create plans for our clients and things inevitably, investments or just life, go off course. You know, you could get injured and have to retire early. You could, you know, somebody could get sick. You could end up with more kids than you expected, whatever it is. So we're creating these plans and then, you know, they're just really a guidepost. You know, things change and then we try to go back to it and we adjust as necessary. And that's basically the same thing that we do with your investments every 6 to 12 months. You're checking on your allocation and you're adjusting as necessary.
That's funny you say that, Mary Beth, because I remember having clients tell me, well, why should I do a plan? Because everything's going to change 2 years from now. I'm like, a plan is not like a static thing. You're constantly changing the plan.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fun. All right. It was frustrating playing devil's advocate with all three of you because annoying. I agree with you. And I'm trying not to. I'm trying to play the bad guy, but that was difficult. Hey, it's time for our mid roundtable break to talk about financial technology. And man, do we have some technology for you. And by the way, I forgot to say this at the top of the show, but at the end of the show, we have the thrilling conclusion of our game. So stick around after the roundtable's over for the end of the show. We'll talk also a little bit about what's coming up the next 8 weeks of the show, because this is our last show of this 8 week period. But back to our fintech spot, you know, if you know you're somebody who needs fintech, if you're racing against the clock to wrap up three projects, you're prepping for a meeting later in the afternoon, all at the same time as the time that you're trying to tackle a mountain of paperwork, that is life as a freelancer. Challenging? It is challenging, but our friends at FreshBooks believe that the rewards are so worth it, and so do you, or you wouldn't be a freelancer. As you know, the working world's changed, and with the growth of the internet, there's never been more opportunities for self-employed people, and to meet that need, FreshBooks is announcing the launch of an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. Redesigned from the ground up and custom-built for exactly the way you work, get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, to get paid fast. The all-new FreshBooks, not only ridiculously easy to use, it's packed with powerful features. Listen to this. You can create and send professional-looking invoices in less than 30 seconds, set up online payments with just a couple clicks, and get paid up to 4 days faster. How great's that? And see when your client's seen your invoice and put an end to the guessing games. You get a 30-day unrestricted free trial because you're listening to our podcast. Here's how you claim it. Head to stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks. And then in the how did you hear about us section, put in Stacking Benjamins. And that tells them that you're listening to this show and that you're a smart person using FreshBooks. And I mentioned this the last few weeks. We use FreshBooks at the Stacky Benjamin Show, and it's the world's easiest thing. I wasn't even a little surprised. I was about to say I was very surprised. I wasn't even a little. I was amazingly surprised by how easy it was. All right, our little disclaimer. We do not endorse any of the cool new technologies that we talk about on the FreshBooks FinTech Friday segment. Our goal, just to show you some of the huge number of options out there. I think most of us just walk into the bank, as I've said, when I talk about Magnify Money and you say, what do you got? We don't even realize how many options there are when we look online. And today's guest from Penny is going to tell us all, but this is really cool. Penny is, well, you know what? Let's talk about Penny. Mitch Lee coming down to the basement to talk about the Penny app with us. And Mitch Lee, co-founder of Penny, joins us. Welcome, man. Have a seat. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm better now that you're here, because when I discovered Penny, and you guys have been around for a little while, but when I discovered it just a couple of weeks ago, I thought, we got to have the people that make this on because it looks so cool. Mitch, was it the marketplace you looked at and it needed something like Penny, or did you find you were having some frustration with your own financial picture? What was the genesis of Penny?
A little backstory on me. I'm pretty odd in that I've been a personal finance enthusiast my entire life. Like, my parents, from a very young age, taught me how to manage my money. They had little piggy banks set up for me. I used to get paid for some of the harder chores that I did. So I grew up living and breathing finances. When I was in high school, I was trading currencies. I mean, I was an evangelist of mint.com back in the day. And so this has been kind of like a lifelong journey. And then at some point when I became a software developer, I finally had an opportunity to correct what I thought was like missing in the solutions that existed out there, which is primarily that most traditional ways to keep track of your money are spreadsheet heavy or very graph heavy. They tend to be really technical, and it alienates a lot of the people that find finances intimidating, if that makes sense.
No, but that's funny, though, because for a guy that kind of grew up with finance and you seem, you know, especially if you're in software development, you'd be a spreadsheet guy yourself. I'm surprised that a spreadsheet guy figures out that spreadsheets might be a part of the problem.
Yeah. So funny story there is that like I actually loved using mint.com. It had spreadsheets. It had 100 different categories. It was awesome. And then I'd go to tell my friends about it and say, hey, guys, you should really try this out. Or I'd tell my girlfriend, hey, use this to keep track of your money. And people found it extremely intimidating and didn't want to do it. And the retention, even with me egging them on, was terrible with using this product. So I realized, I mean, it takes a little empathy jump, but I realized like this isn't working for other people. Like finances for most people are really intimidating. And I gathered that information from interacting with my own friend group and my own network.
That's so cool. So you used mint.com like a beta test.
Yeah, basically. there were some things that I thought were really neat about it, but there were others that I thought it came a little short, and that's what we're trying to help with Penny.
That's awesome. So walk me through it. I go to the App Store and I download Penny, and what happens then?
Yeah, so we're on both App Stores, Google and Apple. You download the app, you sign up really quick, and then Penny starts having a conversation with you via chat, like a chat interface, walks you through the process of connecting your accounts. And then once you finish connecting your accounts, you'll see all of your transactions in one place. We have 5 very simple categories. But the real heart of the experience is that every time you chat with Penny, every time you open up the app, Penny's sharing these interesting insights like, hey, do you know what the place is that you spend most of your money at? Do you know how much you spend on fast food? You have a bill coming up next week. Hey, Bank of America just charged you a fee. Were you aware of that? Those sorts of insights. So every time you open up the app, you're getting kind of like more knowledge and more comfortable with where your money is going.
But you've made Penny also, I've noticed, Mitch, kind of, I don't know, is empathetic and friendly too strong?
No, I think that's exactly how we want to describe Penny. It is empathetic and fun. I mean, finances don't have to be scary. I think a lot of this, like what makes them so intimidating is that it's just so complicated to understand all this legalese. But when you have a conversation about your finances, suddenly it's a lot more approachable. One of the reasons why we chose chat is because it's very good at distilling that complexity into something easily consumable. Rather than saying like, okay, I see these like raw transactions, Penny can say, hey, it looks like you spend this much on your gym membership. How many times do you go? Let's have a conversation about this and figure out if this is working out for you.
So the conversation, Mitch, does it go two ways then? Do I chat back?
Yeah, so we use kind of like pre-populated responses.
Gotcha, yeah.
It's a design decision on our part. It means that you don't need to figure out like how to ask the question you have or what questions to be even asking in the first place. We do have times where you could type into Penny and chat back, but for the most part, it's as simple as just clicking another button and kind of choosing your way through a conversation.
That's fantastic. Do I pay for the app? Is the app free? How does it work?
We believe pretty strongly in keeping the core experience free.
Okay.
We're trying to help people that may not have a lot of money. So that's really important to us. For the longest time, we actually didn't make any money. And in fact, until just recently, we made no money. So for the first year and a half, we recently added a donation button to Penny. So you can click a button and donate some money to the team working on this. There are 5 of us now. We'll soon be expanding into 2 new areas to make money. One is when we recommend a product that we really believe in, we currently do that for free. Now we'll ask that company to give us some money in return.
Gotcha.
It's something that we take very seriously, like our responsibility to make sure we're recommending good products to people. And then the second area is subscriptions. Adding in power user features that may not necessarily apply to most people. But if you're really enthusiastic and want more categories or just kind of want the ability to edit transactions and things like that, we'll charge a subscription fee to get access to those power features.
But I can use it. I can use it for free for a while. Make sure it's something I like, something I'm using before I take that step. So
yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you don't want those powerful, like more powerful features, you can use Penny for free as long as you want.
Am I telling Penny all of my financial life, or what am I putting in there? Is it budget and investments, or is it mostly my bank information and it's pretty budget based?
It's a lot about your bank account and your credit cards, like the things that you're actively spending on.
Got you.
But if you link your investment accounts and stuff, Penny will keep you updated on like, hey, here's how your net worth or your net debt or whatever it is in your case is tracking over time.
Right. What do you see coming down the road for this? Because as you know, this whole push toward machine learning, right? And I'm sure you guys are right in there working on making Penny stronger all the time, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. For us, in the pipeline is continuing to make these insights more powerful and more actionable. We view it as kind of a three-step process to helping you get better. The first one is observe your finances. Then it's forecast your finances for you. And the final one is help you change. And so we do a really good job with observe. We're getting better at forecasting, telling you when bills are coming up or what you're projected to spend if you keep spending the way that you have been recently. And then the last one is change. And that's the one that we're going to spend most of our time on moving forward, which is setting goals to reduce spending that you don't want, canceling things that you're not using, finding a better bank that doesn't charge you fees, those sorts of things.
I've always thought, Cheryl, my spouse and I have always joked that with like our GPS, I wish they had like a pirate mode or somebody who's like my mean friend who calls me bad names. Have you guys ever tossed that around, like having a nasty Penny mode?
Yeah. We've definitely considered the idea. I think some people respond to that, but right. For now we're going to stick with friendly.
Oh, come on. Yeah, I guess I won't get a job at Penny then.
Yeah. Sorry to break the bad news.
I got to ask you the question that everybody's wondering about whenever you talk about, you know, handing over information like how to get into your bank account. What about security, Mitch?
My co-founder and I both have a background in the finance industry. We've connected with bank accounts in the past and banks in the past. We take security extremely seriously. We use all the same security measures that major banks are using, plus some, because, again, we know that this is a big deal to people, and we know that they're entrusting us with access to their financials. So we definitely take it really seriously.
The app is the Penny app. And like you said, you can get it for free at both app stores. We'll have links on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. Thanks for hanging out for a few minutes, Mitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks again to Mitch from Penny for coming down. And as I just mentioned, we'll have a link to that and everything we talk about on today's show, as well as FreshBooks, SoFi, and Magnify Money on our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. All right, let's get back to our very fun discussion with Mary Beth Storjohan, Katie Brewer, and Paula Pant. Let's move to our third piece for the evening, which comes to us from the Moneyologist. This is a game we play every once in a while, where we take the MarketWatch Moneyologist column and I ask our contributors to answer a Moneyologist question without looking at what the Moneyologist actually said. So here's a good one. Dear Moneyologist, our local public golf course charges a fee of, wait for it, $3 for advance reservations. I agreed to play with an acquaintance who made the reservation. When we arrived to play on Saturday, the pro shop charges both the regular fee for 18 holes of golf, around $45 each, but charged only my partner the $3 reservation fee. They did not charge me the $3 fee, but we only discovered this later. After the golf was finished and we had gone our separate ways, he texted me to tell me that I'd forgotten to pay him my half of his $3 reservation fee. I apologized and said I'd pay him $1.50 the next time we played. He said he was going on vacation and persisted. He asked if I used Venmo. I said, no, what's Venmo? He said, ask your kids. My friends and I used it to settle up when we buy tickets. I registered for Venmo and sent him $1.50, but I felt like the request was rude and small-minded. Am I being too sensitive? Should I play with him again? So Mary Beth, we'll start with you. Dude is persistent about getting his $1.50. Does that make sense, or is that rude and small-minded?
my impulse was I wouldn't hang out with that guy again. But then I realized it could probably be like a deeper control issue type thing for him. So it sounds like a cheap type thing. It seemed a little, I would go rude and small-minded, but I think it's probably my bet, just from like the money psychology side, is it's maybe a little bit more deep-rooted than rude and small-minded. But yeah, initially my impulse was ugh.
So you're saying don't play with him again. Stay away.
My initial impulse was stay away. Again, if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt from like the psychology thing, it's probably a deeper rooted issue. It has nothing to do with you and it is him. And I'd probably sweep it under the rug and I'd probably give it one more shot.
I see. So you
my initial, I was turned off initially though. My impulse was like, no, but after time and thinking about it, I was like, well, there's probably some sort of psychology thing going on there. So, you know, let's move on past it, give the guy a chance and see if it's a, you know, ongoing habit or trait.
But if it is, and knowing that it's him, not you, does that change it? Like, if you're like, yeah, he's my weird friend and this kind of gets under his craw, but I'm okay with it because he's a nice guy otherwise.
Then you have to realize, I mean, if it's impacting you and you're irritated by it, then you walk away. I mean, then it's that person. For me, if somebody was like that insistently, it wouldn't be my cup of tea. I would probably cut the relationship. But if it's yours, more power to you.
Katie, would you cut the relationship or not?
All right. I'm about to, you know, probably get hounded on saying this, but I'm a financial planner and a lot of financial planners are very analytical and sometimes maybe not so great with people. I know Mary Beth and I probably surprised the heck out of you because we are also financial planners. I'm also married to an engineer. And likewise, they are sometimes really analytical and sometimes forgot the class where they learned some people skills. So my first thought on reading this was, that guy must have been an engineer, because I swear when engineers and or financial planners latch onto something, they will not freaking let it go. Whether it's like worth it to piss that person off over $1.50 or not worth it, but they've already decided that they're right. Therefore, will not let the stupid $1.50 go.
True story on the engineer versus. I will agree.
So are you saying, Katie, you're married to this guy?
No, I'm married to the guy that's not that guy, but I've seen some of that.
Katie, are you this guy? Is that what you're telling us? Are you this guy, Katie?
I think used to be that guy back when I was in high school. I remember bringing a graphing calculator, shout out to graphing calculators, to a restaurant so that I could like add up what every single person had bought.
Oh my God.
And no, I really did. And there's like, you know, six of us. And I'm like, you owe $7.75. You owe $10.45. And they're like, can't we just split it six ways? And I'm like, nope. I went to college and people smacked me around and told me that you can't do that and still have friends anymore. So I'm a recovering over analytical person with money.
Paula?
Yes, Joe?
Are you not this person. I've hung out with you. You're like, let's split it however.
But, you know, in high school, I used to be. And I think when I was younger, I used to be. Like, when I made $5.15 per hour working at the drive-thru of McDonald's, you know, $2 or $3 was like half an hour's wages before taxes.
It was like a third of a Panera meal. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that among younger people, this behavior is common. Like, I mean, I remember even in college, like, you know, you'd offer someone like $4 in gas money if they drove from like point A to point B. But, you know, I think it becomes less common as we grow older and as our means expand. And so I think what makes this particular letter and incident remarkable is that the people in question are older, because they're at least old enough to have kids who are familiar with Venmo. And, you know, they're spending $45 per person on a round of golf.
Right.
So, like, they've got age and they've got means. And in that context, it makes the $1.50 very different than it would, you know, if it was like a high schooler.
So what would you do?
I think the crux of that question, so I agree with Mary Beth in that probably, you know, the fact that the guy made that request reflects some type of psychological or emotional issue that he's dealing with. And the crux of the question of whether or not to hang out with him again is, like, we are all, every single person, like, we're all a little bit weird and we're all a little bit broken. So what type of broken do you accept, or, you know, who's broken do you want to hang out with?
It depends on your broken tolerance is what.
Your broken appetite. Right. Risk appetite, broken appetite.
Let's talk about one more thing here, which is because I don't think there's any more to do. I think the guy is incredibly cheap too. But I had a roommate like this in college. It's funny how we're all echoing the same story. My roommate in college actually apologized to me. He said, you know, I fight it all the time. He goes, it just drives me crazy. If it's not split exactly the way it should be, it just drives me crazy. He would look at the tax on the phone bill, and if it came out to half a cent, he would let me know that he was charging himself the extra cent this time, and I would get charged the extra cent next time to make up for it. And he'd make sure that we were fair that way. I'm like, really? Well, I don't care. But you must know some really cheap stuff. I love stories about people that are just uber cheap. And I'm wondering if any of you have, Katie, got an uber cheap story for us?
I do, but I'm wondering if I'm going to get myself in trouble by telling this story.
No, nobody listens to the show.
All right. It's just me talking to you guys.
It's just us. And the two of them are in a closet somewhere in Vegas.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. So I had a friend that she had what she called a gift closet, which is re-gifting, but taken to an extreme, ridiculous level. So like she would open up the gift closet and there was like stuff falling out of it. It was like one of those linen cabinets. And I think part of it was because she's a teacher and sometimes they just get a bunch of stuff and a lot of it's stuff they don't really want. But at the same time, like not everybody thinks, hey, what I'm going to do is every single time I have an event or a birthday or anything like that, I'm going to go to my re-gifting closet with way too much stuff in it and pull something out and give it to somebody else. So that's my cheap friend story.
That is super frugal. That's amazing. Mary Beth?
I'd say, so this is like, because of the person it is, it's actually very endearing to me, and I would never speak badly of this person. It is my grandmother. She is, I would say it's very frugal, but I actually wrote a newsletter post about this recently. But I mean, it gets to the point where, I think it's also old age, where we're like reusing, you know, plastic plates. We're washing the plastic plates after we have them, or washing the plastic utensils. It doesn't do it anymore, but there was a point when she had us washing out like the like, saran wrap for things.
Oh, and, wow.
It's just like crazy little, and she's a regifter also. Like we get like coffee mugs with like a $20 in it, you know, stuff is all constantly recycled through, but it goes back in line with almost like the stealth wealth thing. Cause she would do those things, but then she sprung and brought the whole family on a cruise.
Oh,
so she's
wow.
cheap in certain areas so that she can spend in the areas that are important to her, which I've definitely taken that lesson, and she will, I mean, if she has a warranty on anything, you better bet she will work her way like to the top of the chain. Like she got a 20-year-old set of pans replaced one time through a warranty. So this woman is intense, but I'd say she's probably one of the cheapest people I know in that sense, but she also will spend it in other areas.
That's amazing. 20-year-old pans and goes to
it
look up.
It was crazy. I mean, there are some amazing things that this woman has done, but I don't think people tell her no. I mean, she's a 80-something little Italian woman, and she gets her way.
That's fabulous. Paula, you must have one.
Wow, I don't think I can top that answer. I was actually going to share a story about myself. Like back in my cheap days, when I was working at the newspaper, I would normally bring my own lunch to work, but occasionally on the days that I forgot to do so, instead of buying a lunch, I would go to the grocery store and just eat the free samples. Just like walk laps around the grocery store.
That is so awesome. They'd be like, it's you again. And you'd be like, no.
I'm the other.
Like me.
I'm the other short
Costco
girl.
Costco still gets that a lot.
That's right. Yeah, that's why there's a picture of Paula on the door still. Don't let her in. Right. That's awesome. I've got one. My Uncle Dick is notorious. Just as notorious. And when I was growing up, he and my Aunt Ruth, his wife, my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Sue, they decided to go, the two couples of them, on a lighthouse tour up north. And my Uncle Eddie told the most hilarious stories about what my Uncle Dick did because he was so cheap. They're driving along. Then it's around lunchtime. And my Uncle Dick, who's driving, says, hey, do you want to stop at, there's a regional chain of restaurants called Big Boy. He said, hey, you want to stop up here in whatever town they're at Big Boy? My Uncle Eddie goes, yeah, that sounds good. Sounds great. So they pull into the restaurant parking lot. My Uncle Dick, who suggested it, puts the car in park, turns it off. And as my Uncle Eddie and Aunt Sue go walking toward the restaurant, they turn around because my Uncle Dick is opening up the trunk of the car. And my Uncle Eddie says, oh, what are you doing? And my Uncle Dick says, well, I've got sandwiches here in the trunk for Ruth and I, but you guys go in and eat. So he suggests going to Big Boy, but not for him. He was going to sit in the parking lot and eat sandwiches in the parking lot with my aunt. And then the whole trip was to go see lighthouses around the Great Lakes. So it's a great trip. And, you know, going to see lighthouses, like I can see them from the outside. But my Uncle Eddie said, we're on a trip specifically to see lighthouses, and they would charge like $2.50 for a restoration fee for you to go up. And it was just a way for them to make a few dollars to go up in it. And they must have visited like 25 lighthouses. Every single time there was a fee, my Uncle Dick wouldn't go up. It's like, no. Wow. Which would be fine if they were just passing by. But when you're on a trip to specifically go see lighthouses and $2.50 keeps you out of the lighthouse, that's my uncle.
Funny. I will have to admit that I have brought peanut butter and jelly with me to many a vacation, especially when it was an expensive area. Because I was like, you know what? That food is just going to go in my stomach and be digested. I don't want to spend $30 on a freaking hamburger. So I'm going to eat peanut butter and jelly four days straight.
Well, that totally makes sense. But if you're going to do that, at least offer to share the sandwiches with the people that you're with.
Yeah. And don't suggest go to a restaurant. Why don't you say, hey, I've got some sandwiches back here. Do you guys have some? And if they don't, and if you don't even have enough to share, do you want us to pick up something and we can all take it out to a park and eat? He didn't do that. He suggests a restaurant and it doesn't go in. That's the part that was surreal to me. Unbelievable. All right, ladies.
Okay, I'll remember not to sneak my peanut butter and jelly sandwich into a restaurant with you guys. Well,
just don't suggest we go and then sit outside on a bench. You can bring it in, but don't sit outside on a bench. I'm like, Katie, you said we're going here. No, I'm sitting out here. All right, I'm looking at the time, and to be respectful of everybody's time, let's find out what you guys are all up to. So, Katie, we'll start with you. Len called at the last second. Thanks for being our last second edition. I think, Katie, you knew what, an hour ago you were coming on?
Yeah. You know, I like dropped everything. I was like, client, sorry, we're going to have to cut this meeting short because I've got to go talk with Joe and the girls in the closet.
That's right. She
Well, Katie, one day you'll be telling the story under the headline of when I knew I'd hit rock bottom.
Right. Exactly.
It's part of Katie's tell-all memoir. Coming soon, right?
And I'm going to now go write a book about it or start a podcast. I'm not sure which one.
What's happening at yourrichestlifeplanning.com?
I just put out an article on spring vacation on a budget in case anybody's thinking about being cheap but still traveling at the same time. So we've got that out there. If anyone wants to check it out on the blog, it's yrlplanning.com.
And we'll link to it in the show notes as usual at stackingbenjamins.com. And Mary Beth, thanks a ton. Even though you had to sit next to Paula in the closet, I feel bad for you.
Don't mind at all.
Tell everybody about the new podcast because this is awesome. I was listening to it just before we went on.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So my company is Workable Wealth. I wrote a book last year called Work Your Wealth, and the podcast now is accompanying basically the information in the book. The podcast has been talking about it for I don't know how long. I way overcomplicated the process of launching a podcast. Oh my goodness.
But you did it.
But I did it.
I'm still talking about it.
It is hysterical. So the podcast, basically, I'm talking all things money, career, family, and just where finances intersect. So I have lots of authors, business owners, just a unique spin. It's for women. It's predominantly for everybody, but a lot of women are in my audience. So it's for women. And really, it's just meant to break down the barriers around finances. I found with a lot of my clients that it's just, money is still an uncomfortable topic for them. So it's making it more digestible, making the topics easier to understand, easier to follow on, and giving them tips and tools that they can implement in their own lives, whether through their businesses, in their marriages and relationships, with their friends and family, whatever it is. But yeah, it's launched. I've got 4 episodes live. It launched this week, and I have 1 episode rolling out every week going forward.
That's so awesome. Well, congratulations. I know you had our friend Adrienne Dorson on. We love her.
I love Adrienne. She's fantastic. I was on her show. I think that's how we got connected, right? Through Adrienne.
That is right. That's exactly right. That's funny. Well, thanks for hanging out with us again in the closet. And Paula, what's happening over there at Afford Anything?
On the Afford Anything podcast, I will be doing a few more. Actually, Joe, you inspired me. So you came on to the show a couple weeks ago and we co-did an Ask Paula together. So took listener questions and you and I both addressed them. And I'm going to be doing more of that. So that is coming up on some of the future Ask Paula, the future Afford Anything podcast. That's the name of my podcast.
What is it? And we always have that on the show notes at stackybenjamins.com. Thanks for playing, ladies. That was fun.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All that's going to do for this episode, everybody. Hey, guess what? We have completed 8 weeks, and that means that our game is coming to a conclusion. I've got our winner. Actually, as I mentioned last week, we have two winners. Somebody else taking home a Stacky Benjamin's t-shirt, who may have guessed it late. I put everybody's name in a hat, and man, did the winners come out on that last one. I think, well, let me see. We've got 27 people who wrote in after the fact on top of the six that we had that got it the week before. So we'll go through that in just a second. But first, I got to say a big thanks to everybody who headed to StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's spelled S-O-F-I. Because if you went there, you already know what you would have found. They're the leader in marketplace lending. They help you with student loans, personal loans, mortgages. Here's how it works. You point your browser to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI. It'll ask you very quickly what type of help you're looking for. And from that point, you fill in a few details about you. And like our friend Dan Macklin over at SoFi says, in a few seconds in most cases, you'll know everything about how they can work with you. You'll be able to pick from different terms, check out the interest rate on variable and fixed rate options to get the ball rolling. In fact, it's so easy. MagnifiedMoney.com lists their fine print rating as A+, meaning it's super duper easy to understand. You're looking for lower rates and a good partner, and they're looking for a new member to help. For your mortgage, student loan, personal loan, head to StackyBenjamins.com/SoFi. And it's we've got some interesting SoFi stuff coming up in the next 8 weeks because the SoFi blog, if you've never been there, fantastic. And so I asked David Gardner over at SoFi to help us with the guest, and he delivered big time. So we're putting that together as I speak, putting it together today, which brings up, by the way, somebody who helped us this 8 weeks is Nick Clements over at MagnifyMoney.com. If you haven't been to MagnifyMoney.com, you owe it to yourself to just take a tour, because the cool thing is when you go there, you can do it completely anonymously. They don't ask for any of your information until you're ready to play ball. And by play ball, here's what I mean. Whether it's your checking account, your savings account, any of the debt instruments you use, Magnify Money lines up all the ones that are available. They have over 92% of the products available anywhere in the United States, and they list them from best to worst. So you can sort by interest rate, you can sort by fine print, or just do their generic sort. And so if you have credit cards and you don't think you've got the best one, if you have debt but don't have a real debt strategy, you want to get your interest rates lower, if you have a checking account that stinks, or you want to link your checking account to your savings account, or you want to get better interest on your savings account, StackyBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney, our longest time sponsor. And we thank them for sticking with us. All right. Lots of fun this 8 weeks because, man, did we have a heck of a game. Usually, for those of you that are new to the show, usually in my game on Friday, I hide this game. And then we ask people to kind of guess even what the game is. But this time we put it out in the open because it was a little bit different and we had some real fun. So each week I gave you a question and you answered that question. So week number one on Friday, so we went 7 weeks. Week number one, the question was Wilson's neighbor. Of course, Wilson's neighbor was Tim. And if you're not familiar with the old show Home Improvement, you wouldn't have gotten that one. But you know what? Like any of our games, you can miss one and you still have plenty of clues around you that will help you. Almost like a crossword puzzle, right? You miss one, you don't have to worry about it. Wilson's neighbor. Wilson was the neighbor who you only saw the top of his head. You never saw his face. But Tim Allen was who we're looking for, or better yet, Tim. And then week number two, the clue was what bad guys in business do to books. Of course, they cook the books. So that gives us Tim and gives us Cook. So, and a lot of people wrote me that they had that part right. Then in week number three, and actually there's only six of these. There are not seven. I'm doing the counting. We had six clues. The question number three was what primary colors and octopus hearts have in common. Of course, there are three of each. So now we have Tim Cook three. Our fourth clue then was, I don't care about directions, but if you head 50 miles up the Hudson River from Manhattan, you will find this college along the shore. And that, of course, is West Point. But I told you that I don't care about directions, so it was Point. So now we have Tim Cook, 3 Point. The next week, the clue was, This is a loner, a leader, a monad. And I gave you several other points, which all were one. And then the last answer, which happened last week, was out of all of the words considered vulgar, half of them have this many letters. And of course, that is four. So we have Tim Cook, 3.14 are all the clues. And you put all those things together. Tim Cook is the CEO of Apple, and 3.14 is pie. And the answer was apple pie. Isn't that fun and easy? And we put all the names together, and Jeff Harbor is going to take home the winning prize. So Jeff will give you some time to listen to this. Just reach out to me, Jeff, and we've got a prize pack coming your way. I think in the early days, I think Jeff won, but he hasn't won recently. So Jeff, you're taking home the prize. And then the t-shirt, we put all the names in for the t-shirt. And what was fantastic is that we had a winner for the shirt that I don't think has taken part in the game yet. Nathan. So let me see if there's more than one Nathan. There is not. So Nathan, write to me. Jeff, write to me. I will then hook you up. Jeff with the prize pack will put together specifically for you. And Nathan, we'll give you the t-shirt code to head out to. By the way, if you want a shirt, head to stackybenjamins.com/shirts. And we've got some awesome swag over there. Our friends at Flying Pork Apparel in Cincinnati help us with all of our apparel. Brad Lark over there is an amazing designer. And I love what he's done to give us some cool swag. So, all right, that's it. Let's talk about the next 8 weeks, shall we? Next week, if you're new to the show, Griffin the intern takes over while OG and I like to joke that we take a break, but we're usually getting everything cleaned up because, man, during the 8 weeks, we make a bunch of messes and we go out and we look for new guests and exciting stuff. And we have some of those people that we're working on right now for the next 8 weeks. We are, by the way, going to have some fantastic episodes. I know I was talking to Griffin earlier today, and the Fintern, Griffin the intern, our Fintern, he's got some of our best shows from the past lined up. So make sure that you catch those next week, especially if you haven't listened for all that long. It's a great way to go back and just get some of the best stuff from the catalog without having to go through every single show. But when we return week after next, the founder and CEO of the fantastic site Daily Worth and Worth FM, Amanda Steinberg, is going to be coming down to the basement. We also have a letters only episode, and I know how much people love those. So if you have a call for the Haven Lifeline, here's what you do. stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And you can get on the Haven Lifeline. Thanks to everybody who left us a review. Just that tells people how to find the show. Thank you to everyone who's told a friend about us. I'm always honored when somebody mentions the show to a friend. Have a fantastic next week with the Fintern. We'll see you back here week after next. Go Stacks and Benjamins.
This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Special thanks to Mary Beth Storjohan. Make sure to check out her new podcast, Work Your Wealth. If you're looking for her online, you'll want to search for workablewealth.com. Special thanks to Mitch Lee from Penny App. You can download Penny from Google Play or the Apple Store. Special thanks to Paula Pant from Afford Anything. And special thanks to Katie Brewer from YourRichestLifePlanning.com. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor.
What do you suppose they call that? A novelty act?
I don't know, but it wasn't too bad.
Well, that's a novelty. Ah!